Okay, welcome back. And some new people have joined us and some have left. That's always interesting, looking up and seeing what's going on. So I want to talk about forgiveness and is it always appropriate from a Buddhist vantage point. And so this is a mandated forgiving. That got me thinking again about forgiveness. And then I had an incident Tuesday morning, which is nothing like any of these, but I certainly did not want to forgive this person. And I was crossing J Street with my elderly dog who barely walks anymore. I was waiting at the light. The guy was across the street in a Jeep, you know, with no top and the roll bar and all of that. We had been waiting a long time. I figured he must have seen me. And as I started walking, he is coming at me and he's coming and I think he's going to kill me. He didn't slow down. He didn't stop. I got out of the way, but I had to pull my old dog off her feet and drag her to get out of the way of his car. And I ended up screaming at him, "Are you out of your mind?" And he yelled back, "Sorry." And I thought, I am in no way forgiving this guy. I feel no forgiveness at all. That sorry means nothing to me. So, I spoke about, and some of you might remember this talk, I spoke about forgiveness with Bhikkhu Anālayo about 3 years ago, and I gave a brief talk on it. Bhikkhu Anālayo is a scholar, a Buddhist scholar. He is a big-time meditator. I mean, when you go on retreat with him, he sits there for 7 hours at a time. And you just think, why aren't his legs cramping? Why isn't something happening to this guy? But he, I went up to him because I had had a prison inmate who had done everything in his power to ameliorate the harm he had done. He had killed somebody as a teenager, as a 15-year-old. He's now 36. And he did everything he could to ameliorate this horrible situation that took place, including sending money to the temple. The guy he killed was a Buddhist, so he sent money to the temple where he went. He became a Buddhist himself. I can't tell you all the work he's done on himself, but the one thing that he couldn't get was forgiveness by this person's family. And that he wanted more than anything. He wanted to be forgiven. And the family refused. And every time he went up for parole, they were there saying they didn't want him released. So he said to me, "What do I do? This is the thing that is always on my mind. How do I take care of this?" So I went to Bhikkhu Anālayo and asked him the same question. And he replied, "Forgiveness is a Christian concept, not a Buddhist one," which really surprised me. And then he explained, you cannot forgive somebody's karma. The action that they put in place is in place. Now you can forgive for your own well-being. You can do your best to work with the healing on yourself, but you cannot forgive someone else. So that's kind of where I'm going to start with, and also my own confusion about this, because I taught a Brahmavihara class. Brahmaviharas are considered the four immeasurables, you know, wonderful states of mind that we develop to be free. And it's often suggested before you teach this is to teach forgiveness practice. And Jack Kornfield, as many of you know, has a very in-depth forgiveness practice. I wonder, how does this line up with what Bhikkhu Anālayo told me? You can see my confusion and why I wanted to investigate this a little bit more. I spoke to my teacher, Gil Fronsdahl, about it, and he said, no, I agree with Biko and Alio. Great. That doesn't help. But he referred me to one particular sutta, and in the sutta, Sariputta, who was one of the Buddha's right-hand people, and completely enlightened, I mean, as enlightened as you can get, nothing bothered him. And so he had something like 500 monks that were in his own entourage, and he tried to remember all their names, but he couldn't. His one fault, I guess. He couldn't memorize all these 500 monks' names. And one of the monks was very insulted that he couldn't remember his name. He said he remembers everyone else's name. Why doesn't he remember my name? I'm obviously paraphrasing from the Pali Canon. And then to make matters worse, when Sariputta walked by this particular monk, his robe brushed against him, and the monk said, and now he's pushing me around. He pushed me. He pushed me on the ground. Why did he do that? So he went to the Buddha and said, you know, the Sariputta that you like so much? Well, he not only does not remember my name, he pushes me around. He pushed me on the ground. And the Buddha said, I find that hard to believe, but let's bring Sariputta in and we'll discuss this. And they did. And Sariputta made a statement that, you know, I'm an enlightened person and I don't recall any of this happening. And if it had, I would have apologized, but I'm like the earth. Things fall on the earth and the earth accepts it and does not respond. And he said, I just don't remember any of this. And then he turned, and then the monk finally admitted, all right, I'm sorry, I made it up. Didn't mean it, but I was mad. And Sariputta didn't say, I forgive you. He said, I pardon you. I pardon you. And there is where a difference starts to come in between forgiveness and pardon. Anybody, I had to look it up. What's the difference between forgiveness and pardon? Anybody have any idea? Well,
forgiveness is like supreme, pardon is you're still on your guard.
Kind of.
Pardon is a social, you know, a social moray has been broken, whereas forgiveness is something you do personally.
I think that's a really good definition, yeah. Would you repeat that? Louder.
Pardon is for the breaking of social norms, whereas forgiveness is deeply personal, subjective.
Yeah. Is she pardoned? Well, actually, what you're saying is exactly what they said in this Mennonite church. They said to forgive means it never happened. Well, here is to quote it, a forgiven sin is a dead topic. It can absolutely never be mentioned again. So, yeah, and a pardon, and you just think of somebody being pardoned after a crime is you accept the crime has been committed, but you are no longer going to be punished for it. Yeah, so it's, as you mentioned, it's not an emotional thing. It is, and that's what Sariputta was doing, because there were things that they did in the Sangha to punish people who lied, you know, who transgressed, who broke the precepts. And he said, I pardon you. Not I forgive you, but I pardon you.
So forgiveness is I think it, I think it, you have to forget what happened. I mean.
Well, that's what we're going to go into. Yeah, Ian.
And you think he used pardon in that situation because he was an authority figure?
Because what?
Because he was an authority figure. And I think of pardon in a personal sense, it's an authority granting that to
Well, in the sutta, and I don't think I cited exactly which one it was in, but I've got it if anybody's interested. They do go into, he is the exalted one, he, you know, had so much respect, you know, so you do get that impression that he is an elevated person that is pardoning this other person who lied about what took place. So Ajahn Suchito, if some of you might know him, another well-known monk. He's the abbot at Amravati in England. And I went to a retreat of his, about 7 or 8 years ago. And I asked him kind of the same question, but in this case, I asked him on the behalf of an inmate who wanted to clear his karma. I don't even know if this is possible, but you know, I used that language and asked him, how would someone who wants to make things right clear his karma? And he said there's 5 steps. And the first step is you admit fully the wrong you did without excuses. And you know, I think many of you, and I know I certainly have had said you're sorry, but you know, when that took place, you know, I blah, 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 and there's reason behind it to admit fully that you transgressed, you caused harm without any explanation about, but the reason is you just admit it. A second is understand deeply the emotion that was involved with the harm that was caused. So in prison, anger is huge. Anger and addiction are the 2 big ones. So knowing that anger was involved, or maybe jealousy or lust or whatever it was, knowing that emotion fully, and then knowing the antidote to that emotion. Every harmful emotion has an antidote in Buddhist practice. What is that? And every time that emotion comes up, you substitute. And for anger, it's metta, you know, boundless friendliness. Every time that comes up, you substitute it. It feels fake, but you do it, fake it till you make it. You just keep doing it till that anger quits coming up. And then you form the intention, this will never happen again. A vow to yourself. It's not going to ever take place. And finally, and he said, only if appropriate, an apology to the victim of whatever took place. And he said, and it's not always appropriate. So in Buddhism, forgiveness takes on a completely different tenor than in other traditions. This is quoting Bhikkhu Thanissaro, who is a very well-known conservative monk, I think really wonderful, though he has sometimes very fairly dogmatic views. But here's what he had to say about this. The Buddha succeeded in establishing a religion that has been a genuine force for peace and harmony, not only because of the high value he placed on these qualities, but also because of the precise instructions he gave on how to achieve them through forgiveness and reconciliation. Central to these instructions is his insight that forgiveness is one thing, reconciliation is something completely different. So this is from the Buddha. There are 2 fools, which 2? The one who doesn't see his or her transgression as a transgression, and the one who doesn't rightfully pardon another who has confessed his or her transgression. These 2 are fools. These 2 are wise, which 2? The one who sees his or her transgression as a transgression, and the one who rightfully pardons another who has confessed his or her transgression. These 2 are wise. So the word for forgiveness in Pali is kama, not the comma, the Pali word for karma, but K-H-A-M-A. And it means to be like the earth. I find that ironic, not to go over into climate change again, which I'm apt to do, but the equation was the earth can take anything and absorb it, and it won't show anything coming from it. It can absorb anything. Well, we know that's not true anymore. Your earth certainly can't take much more. But at the time, that's the way the earth was felt, that you could throw garbage on it, you could urinate on it, you could dig it up. It will repair itself. It doesn't feel an emotion. It doesn't hate you because of what you're doing to it. And that's also the parallel that Sariputta used in the sutta that I mentioned, that I am like the earth. None of this bothers me, and I wouldn't do anything to enhance my own ego. So the word for forgiveness, comma. And the reason you have forgiveness is you unburden yourself of the weight of resentment and cut the cycle of retribution that would otherwise keep you ensnared in an ugly samsaric wrestling match. That's from Tanisaro Bhikkhu. So forgiveness is not for the other person. Forgiveness is for you. You can't, according to the authorities and in Buddhist practice, you cannot forgive someone for the karma they have generated. They are the only ones that can do that, to take care of it. Reconciliation is a completely different matter. And reconciliation, and the Pali term is patisaranya, comma, means a return to amicability, and it requires more than forgiveness. It requires reestablishing trust. And the Buddha had a real mechanism for how to do that. And here, and this comes from the Vinaya. The Vinaya is a code of conduct for monks and nuns. And even though it was for monks and nuns, it can be used for lay people as well. And the Vinaya lays out when reconciliation can take place. And the first step in every case is the acknowledgement of wrongdoing by the other person or you, if you are the wrongdoer. If that doesn't take place, it's not going to happen. It goes back to when Ajahn Suchito told me, you have to admit without any hesitation the harm that you have caused, without excuses. So the first step is acknowledging the wrongdoing. If a monk, in this case from the Vinaya, insults another monk, he has to admit it. No excuses, no reason, no he did that, so I did this. No, I did it. He has to agree that the insult was an offense. And it was uncalled for. He promises to restrain himself from repeating the offense. And this is what they talk about if a lay person is also involved in this, to get a neutral mediator involved, which I think is really ironic because it's, you know, this is what we do now in society. Well, hopefully a lot of us do that, get a neutral person who can listen to the situation, isn't so charged over it. An important thing, and I think this is a wonderful concept, they do what is covering over with grass. And it means you don't bring up other offenses. Now, I just had an experience a couple of weeks ago in mediating a dispute. And I wish I had studied this beforehand, because it would have been very helpful. And I did tell the two people who were having difficulties, they were only going to speak from the I point of view, tell how they feel about the situation, and then we'll discuss it. What kept coming up is this not covering over with grass, which is bringing up other small offenses. But then you said, but then this happened. And do you remember 4 months ago that happened? Nothing was getting solved as one thing got piled up on another. And I kept trying to bring them back. I don't know, frankly, how successful I was. But the Buddha said, this is such an important thing to agree to when you are attempting a reconciliation. You do not bring up other offenses. You don't bring up, this is what you did to me, you know, months ago. This is how you hurt me. You bring up one thing that you're dealing with, and you stick with that, and you look into it and what needs to take place. So it's a promise not to dig up other minor offenses. They have to dig into the root intention for the conflict. What was the cause of the conflict? And then each person can speak from an I point of view on what took place. And reconciliation is not always possible. And that's something to understand. Because sometimes even that root problem isn't even agreed upon. And if you can't even agree on what you're trying to reconcile, how are you going to fix anything? So that root issue has got to be agreed upon.
I have a question. Pardon? No, reconcile.
Reconcile. I'll go into that in just a little bit, because as the Buddha said, reconciliation sometimes is not possible. And forgiveness is only for you. It's not for someone else. If in your heart you cannot forgive somebody for the hurt that took place, reconciliation is not possible either. And forgiveness, you know, as a Buddhist practice, holding on to hatred, holding on to ill will is toxic itself. It doesn't mean, okay, I'm going to forgive that person, that immediately that's what happens. Probably going to have to work on it, and for some people, a long, long, long time. So Thanissaro Bhikkhu said, right and wrong have gotten a bad rap in Western Buddhist circles, largely because of our culture. We have, when one person tries to impose arbitrary standards or mean-spirited punishments on others, we tend to not take the side of right and wrong, or hypocritically demands that others obey standards that he himself does not. And we can see that in society, you know, the way different people of different races or genders are treated when they should be treated exactly as everybody else is. But there's a hypocrisy that takes place. And it tends to make you not trust the rules of right and wrong. And so sometimes Buddhists will then, and we've seen this happen, go into non-duality. Anybody know what that means? You're going into non-duality, no right or wrong. Every situation is looked at in its entirety. However, when you have an authority figure, and we've seen this in Buddhist communities, who arbitrarily decide Well, in this situation, this is what you do. Not in this situation. Authority is taken advantage of. Here's what Tanisaro Bhikkhu had to say about that. Non-duality can also be abusive. Because some authority figures say it transcends right or wrong. I know what I'm doing. I'm an advanced practitioner. I have special knowledge. Trungpa Rinpoche, unfortunately, fell into that category where a lot of people wondered, what is going on here? He's still considered a genius, but he completely ignored the precepts. You know, so, and a lot of people were very hurt by it. And in our own Theravadan community, we've certainly seen it happen as well. It happens all the time. It happens in Christian churches, it happens in Buddhism. People who believe they are above it all and can make decisions. So the Buddha had a way to prevent this from taking place, which I love. And he said there are three questions that people in positions of authority have to ask. Am I free from unreconciled offenses of my own? Am I motivated by kindness rather than vengeance? And then finally, am I clear on our mutual standards? So if those were all followed, I think we'd have a lot less problems with authority figures in all stages of life. And the Buddha said only if they can answer yes to these three questions should they even be involved in an issue of reconciliation. Otherwise, it's authority, I said, because I am this awakened person. The Buddha praised the honest acceptance of blame as an honorable rather than a shameful act, not just a means, but the means for progress in spiritual practice. In fact, for monks and nuns, they are to accept criticism completely and consider that person who criticizes them a teacher, and to revere them as a teacher. And the Dalai Lama said pretty much the same thing when he said the worst person in your life is your best teacher. And you think about it, how do you respond to the most difficult person in your life? It gives you some clue of where you need to progress along the path. I don't know about you, but I got a long ways to go. The Buddha told his son Rahula, the ability to recognize one's mistakes and admit them to others is the essential factor in achieving purity in thought, word, and deed. And this is from the Dhammapada. People who recognize their own mistakes and change their ways illuminate the world like the moon when freed from a cloud. So just stop and think. If you are criticized or somebody offers a critique of something, how do you respond to that? Are you grateful? Are you resentful? You know, consider it, because that's going to give you a barometer on where you are on the path, how you accept that kind of notification from someone else. Modern sociologists have identified five basic strategies that people use to avoid accepting blame when they've caused harm. And then I was thinking of Dylann Roof, who committed that act in the Charleston church, to deny responsibility, to deny that harm was actually done, to deny the worth of the victim, to attack the accuser, and to claim they were acting in the service of a higher cause. And we've seen this, you know, with people of different spiritual traditions, all sorts of things, all kinds of excuses. And the Buddha blocked paths to denial with these considerations. We are always responsible for our conscious choices. This goes back to karma. This goes back to you can't forgive someone's karma. But in your heart, you can let go of anger and hatred. That's what you can do, and you can call that forgiveness, whatever you like. But we're each responsible for what we do. This is why at the intro to meditation class tonight, Thomas beautifully brought up the importance of the present moment. This is where karma is. This is when we decide how are we going to respond to any situation. This is why we have a meditation practice, to slow down, to be able to see what is really, really taking place. The second is we should always put ourselves in the other person's place. That's really difficult to do, but it's so important to be able to do that, to free ourselves from hatred and from anger. All beings are worthy of respect. I love this one. We should regard those who point out our faults as if they're pointing out our treasure. How difficult is that to do? But, and there are no higher purposes that excuse breaking the basic precepts of ethical behavior. All right. This is the Buddha in the Vinaya. I'm using contemporary English, but you know, you get the idea. And the Buddha said, not all disputes can be reconciled. If people will not admit wrong was done, if they make excuses, if you can't even come up with what are we trying to reconcile without bringing in another, reconciliation isn't possible. It doesn't mean that you don't keep trying. It certainly doesn't mean that, but it might mean right at this time, this place, this is a wasted effort, and it could even cause even more harm as people become more entrenched in their views. You know, when I teach right view, I always teach it from wrong view, because we all have wrong views about so many things, and it's so much easier to see right view when you see when you're stuck on a view and you're stuck in your position. And that's when reconciliation is not possible. But, he said, even if reconciliation is still not possible, and this kind of goes back to your point, forgiveness is still an option. Remember the definition of forgiveness in Buddhist practice is allowing your own heart to heal. So you might not like that person, you might never want to see that person again, you want nothing to do with them, but you also don't want to carry around hatred and anger yourself. This is all creating ease for us. The other person has to create their own ease with the karma they have generated. We can be kind, we can put ourselves in their position, we can try to reconcile, but this is their life. This is what the work that they have to do. So, I'm just curious if anybody has any experience with reconciliation or forgiveness that they would like to share. Perhaps something that you were surprised at, that you were able to forgive in your own heart or reconcile with another person. I was thinking of breaking us up into groups.
When you talk karma, I'm not sure I'm understanding what that is. I've always understood as karma as like you do something naughty or bad, and down the road it'll catch up with you and something bad's going to happen to you. And if you have good karma, it's because you're kind and you're doing something nice and like play it forward. Is that what karma is?
Karma is cause and effect. That's all it is. And there will be an effect for everything. There's always a reaction to everything. It might not be immediate, it might be down the road. Some people believe another lifetime even. But there's always going to be an effect from what you do, including what you think, what you say, and what you do, bodily action. It's a big topic.
Well, I was just wondering how when you were using it, I was trying to really understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cause and effect. And the only place karma happens is right here, right this moment, nowhere else. So what happened in the past is your karma. You might suffer repercussions from it, you know, right afterwards, or maybe not for a long time, but at some point it will, good and bad.
Is it worthwhile to draw the distinction between, like, the rigorous definition of karma and the idea that came out in the 60s that became kind of the book, part of the vocabulary and all these misconceptions about
right.
karma?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is the distinction you're drawing, right? The pure cause and effect for everything, thought, word, action.
Exactly. Everything has a consequence to it. So, yeah, as Michael brought up, karma used to have this kind of hippy-dippy kind of thing. You know, I can't even remember it, to be honest. I've been so ensconced in this definition now. But it really is just comes down to cause and effect. With everything you do, thought, word, and deed, there's an effect.
It's a law of physics. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
Absolutely. Okay, Jim, why are you doing that?
Because I like what you said.
All right. Anybody have any comments or questions or your own experience?
Okay. When you were talking about agreeing on what it is you're trying to reconcile, I guess I would like you to flesh that out a little more, what you mean by that. Because to reconcile something between, you know, something has happened, and to reconcile between two people something that has happened, you know, given, is that about understanding each other's view, or is that the root of all of this that happened came out of jealousy or some, you know, negative, some, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's what the Buddha said, and my understanding of what he said is when there is something that is causing, and as he said, problems in the Sangha, you know, this was for the monks and nuns in the Sangha, there's a dispute. Everybody had to agree there was a dispute and what it was about, what was taking place.
So the goal is that return to amicability so that people could get along. And then how do people...
Well, they had a mediator. They had a monk who was not involved. And each person would, I'm assuming, I'm really going out here, but I'm assuming if it's anything like it is today, each person would state their point of view, but they would not be bringing in, as he said, covering with grass, other offenses. But he did this to me, and he also did that, and, you know, trying to up the ante for your side, sticking to exactly that topic that has caused division, and what that person's viewpoint is, what the other person's viewpoint is, and having this mediator flesh out how can we reconcile with this, if it's even possible. But the very first thing is everybody has to agree what the problem is, what the dispute's about. If you can't even get that far, then there's a great sutta, the, Rich, what's the name of that book? Remember that book that was about the whole Sangha coming apart and the Buddha left? And, yes, the Kosambi intrigue. If you want to read a good novel, It's a novel about this split that took place in the Sangha, and it's called The Kosambi Intrigue. And it goes into exactly this, and the Buddha could not bring these two factions together to even agree on the dispute. And so he ended up leaving and saying, I'm not dealing with any of you. He went off and stayed by himself until they were willing to come together and talk about what they mutually agreed was the problem. Yeah, Thomas.
Isn't the fundamental problem attachment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's why he said that person who criticizes you, you should consider them a treasure. And I guess it shows how entrenched the ego is, that selfing is, by how you take, you know, a critique from somebody who has your best interests at heart, but is, you know, giving you an honest critique of something.
Yeah. What came up for me when we were talking about that before was the difference between the messenger and the message.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like really paying attention to the message and not getting distracted by who or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Is saying it.
Exactly.
This may not be the Buddhist understanding, but as you were talking, for me the difference between forgiveness and reconciliation is I know that I can genuinely have forgiven someone for an act that they did towards me, where I'm good with it, I'm letting it go. But to reconcile with that person means restoring a relationship.
Exactly.
And that's a very different level. I think it's another level beyond forgiveness and trickier, particularly depending on the kind of harm that was done.
You're so right. And reconciliation might not be possible.
Right, or appropriate.
Or appropriate.
Some people you know will be repeat offenders, and so if only for self-protection, you just have the grace to move on.
Exactly. And this woman in the Mennonite church, she was excommunicated while her husband was brought in with open arms, because she would not forgive him, and that was against the tenet, but she did not want anything to do with him. Yeah, Tom?
Just a curious, ironic twist. They're guilty of not forgiving her.
It's a good point. It's a very good point. Yeah.
I've noticed over the last number of years, a few times there's been like documentaries and stories about people who have committed atrocities, whether it's Jeffrey Dahmer or Charles Manson. And something that I've heard repeatedly is anger and the comment, don't humanize them. That the reaction to these stories, where they look beyond the harmful actions and look deep into the person, was this phrase, don't humanize them. And I find that very interesting. And as I look back on my life and still carry some resentment toward people that I feel have harmed me, I don't see them as human. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And I'm reluctant to.
Yeah. That's your path. That's something that you contend with, you know, however you contend with it. As Margaret said, you know, forgiveness and reconciliation are two different things altogether.
Basically, forgiveness is for yourself.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Reconciliation is including that person and establishing a new relationship.
But sometimes it's not possible.
That's right.
I had a really powerful experience last month. I was in Mississippi on a civil rights tour, and the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan came to speak to us. He had left the Klan. And just to hear what he came to understand about how he ended up where he ended up and his level of forgiveness, his level of responsibility for what he had done, was very, very powerful. However, what was even more important is the leader of the group, who is African American, had said to us, you know, you have to understand that each person listening to this comes from a different context, and their level of forgiveness is going to be different, and that he could not even sit and listen to this man for 2 years. So it not only gave me the experience of being with my own hearing and hurting and whatever level of forgiveness, but to understand that other people had a different experience of that, and some couldn't go there at all. So it was really powerful.
Thank you, Barb.
The thing that's so interesting, and you made me think of it, Barbara, is that it's such a two-way street, because the forgiveness process, I've had a very difficult situation a couple of years ago with someone who I feel was very unkind and somewhat abusive. And it was months before I could even think about the situations or read the emails or anything without just flaring in my mind and completely losing any semblance of balance around it. It took a long time. This was not having contact with this person or anything. It was all inside. And I wondered for a while whether I was ever going to get to the point where I could actually look at it with a more even, balanced way. And eventually I was, but it took a lot of work, a lot of metta practice, a lot of forgiveness of myself for not being able to handle it better. You know, it just kind of boomerangs, even when you're just doing it in your own head and body. So you can see where something like what you were talking about just has such an effect on people, the individual person, you know.
Thank you for that. And you raised such a good point. Even you know you're suffering, that you're burning up, it might be a long, long process to be able to drop that.
Yeah. I did a lot of it through meditation. She just asked me if I did it through meditation, and I certainly did a lot of it through meditation, yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons we have meditation, is to actually feel these emotions, see what is taking place, and seeing how we're suffering. Now, what do I do about it? Like Ajahn Suchita said, know that emotion well. What's the antidote to it? Mm-hmm. That's what you practice with. So, metta, you know, for the anger that you were dealing with. Anyone else? Yes, Karen.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think sometimes having the time that you had and taking it, because you're really not done until you're done. You have to process it on however many levels you have to process it. After my accident, I ended up being very grateful that the court case for the woman, the drunk driver who hit and nearly killed me, was months after the accident, because I couldn't have gotten to the place I got with her, which is I have forgiven her completely, and it is also clear to me that she has profound remorse, and that the karma that she will live with from this accident is probably far worse than what I've lived with from it. But if it hadn't worked out with those months where it kept getting put off, I wouldn't have been able to finish the processing. And I wouldn't have been ready when it came time to write to the judge, which victims in felony cases can do, to say that I am interested in restorative justice if she is open to it and willing to take responsibility. And as it turned out, she was, and the judge let us have a period to do that. But it's just, you can't bypass it, or do it too fast, and you just have to try to, you know, part of me says, well, I should be able to get past this, but I couldn't until I could.
And the person was willing to take responsibility also.
She took full responsibility, and to the point where when her lawyer tried to get her out of part of the sentence in court, she stopped him and said, no, I am fully responsible. It was an issue about restitution. She said, I'm fully responsible. If it takes me the rest of my life, it's one thing that I can do, and I need to do it for me as much as for her, meaning me.
Yeah. And that's got to make it so much easier for you to be
able. Oh, God,
able.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what the Buddha was talking about, you know, being admit fully the harm that has been caused without excuses.
And
if there had been excuses, your heart probably would have hardened. It would have taken you longer.
It would have taken, yes, it would have taken longer. And if the hearing had been much sooner after the accident, I probably wouldn't have been ready to hear her taking full responsibility either, because it just makes clear that, you know, there aren't shortcuts. You just you just process it through, and it keeps coming up in different ways and different levels until it's done.
Yeah, so it can be a long process, but it is definitely a worthwhile process if you want to have a mind that is more spacious and free. This is the kind of thing you work on.
For me, it felt like this huge weight lifted. It was amazing. I walked out of the courtroom and I said, I think I weigh 40 pounds less.
All right, anything else? If not, we're closing up shop. Oh, one more thing. Okay.
This is, since you're closing up shop, I just wanted to say there's no sin next Thursday.
Barb made that announcement.
Okay.
But thank you for making it again. Yes, a reminder, the cards in the back for Miles and Ruth's family, so please sign them if you haven't. All right, so let's just do a final closing metta. May our time here together tonight cause us to reflect on forgiveness being an antidote for ourselves when we are angry, when we're jealous, when we're full of rage, and when we're willing to look at that and let it go, it benefits not just us, but every sentient being whom we come in contact with. May we wake up to the reality of our lives and have a clear path on what we need to do to create harmony and spaciousness. And may all of us in this room and all sentient beings be awakened in this lifetime. So thank you all for coming.